Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, as we take another look back at the Week 1 victory over Jacksonville, 27-23, focusing first on the offense, 27 points, a pretty good day on the road especially. 2 years ago when the Packers led the league in scoring, I believe the average was around 30 points per game. So 27 points is a pretty good day, but there were some things that the Packers can do better. It's not as though this offense was clicking on all cylinders right from the get-go.
Yeah, I think that's the message you heard from both Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson after the game in terms of there were a lot of positives to be drawn from that first opener against Jacksonville, but yet there were a lot of things that they still know they need to achieve to get the offense to where they want it to be this season. And one of the big things probably is that four-minute offense near the end of the game, going three and out there. That was something where I think it looked promising to begin with Aaron Rodgers getting the 8-yard scramble, staying in bounds to let the clock run a little bit, but then some of the miscommunication problems that they had. And I think a lot of that's going to come with time and being able to, over this, you know, this first month of the season, really get set and firm into what they are expecting to do. But it's something that Jacksonville dealt with as well, and they were the home team. I mean, you saw a couple times there where Blake Bortles had to use timeouts in rapid succession. So, yeah, it was a great performance, but I think in the locker room afterwards, you heard it from a lot of the offensive players that they still feel like there's a lot more to accomplish.
Yeah, I would agree. And the interesting thing from a statistical standpoint is that the Packers had 4 3-and-outs in the game. They had the 3 in a row in the first half when they were having the field position problems, kept getting backed up deep by the goal line. Then they had the 3 and out at the end of the game, as you mentioned. The other possessions, as long as the Packers got a first down, they went on to score points. It's as though, and the players have been talking about this, it's as though getting that first down is what gets the offense rolling and they're able to find a rhythm. It's almost like a feast or famine type of situation.
Yeah, Jordy Nelson mentioned that when this offense gets that first down, they really, that's when they're at their best and really can stress a defense. And yes, obviously there's something to be said for getting the first down, starting that momentum, but the way that the offense is structured too, that's where they really start to stress out a defense in terms of the 12 men on the field penalties that Aaron Rodgers can draw, you know, the false starts with his hard count. That's when you can start to see him really start to work his magic, so to speak. So the positive thing, I think, in this game that you can definitely draw is that we did see that sort to come back to the surface with, you know, the 2-minute drive right before halftime, that long, sustainable drive in the third and fourth quarter. So it's there. They just want to be able to do it on a more consistent basis now.
Yeah, and I think the consistency needs to start with the running game. We saw when the offense got going in the second quarter, really, with those back-to-back touchdown drives, or at least the first of those two touchdown drives in the second quarter. It started with Eddie Lacy getting a couple of 4- and 5-yard runs. Randall Cobb, I think, sprinkled in a 4- or 5-yard run. It was getting the running game going. But you look at Eddie Lacy's game overall, 14 carries for 61 yards, about 4.5 yards a carry. That's not a bad day, especially in those conditions. But he had a 28-yard run in the second half, and he had the 9-yard run on the 4th and 1 early when the Packers went for it. So that's 37 of his 61 yards on 2 carries. His other 12 carries, only 24 yards. Now, an average is an average. It is what it is. But you don't want to see the big runs and then a bunch of, you know, nothing or minimal gain. You'd like to see more consistency with it. And I think based on what we saw in the preseason, the Packers are going to continue to work toward that.
Yeah, absolutely. As we talked about before, leading up to the regular season, they ran the ball at a really record pace level this offseason in terms of how much in practice they focused on it with the half line drills and how much they executed those packages in actual regular season game action too, or preseason game action too. Excuse me. So when you look at Lacy, I think that was probably the biggest key is when you get inside, not only being able to have those explosive plays, but when you get inside the red zone too, being able to really eke out those extra yards and really push the end zone. I think that's probably the one area where the Packers fell short a little bit in this game is they did have some really nice drives, some nice series, but then they got within that 10-yard line and things started to you know, kind of get stopped a little bit. So if you can shore that up, I think there's really no reason to think that this offense can't be that top 10, top 5 level again that it was back in 2013 and 14 with the run game.
Yeah, and Another thing, kind of a statistical anomaly, at least I'm going to call it that, based on what we expect. Jared Cook, the new tight end, only one catch for 7 yards in the game. I expected him to be more involved. Not sure if it was just a game plan thing, maybe not attacking the middle of the field as much as the Packers might against some other defenses. We don't know what goes into all that film study. Cook did draw the big 30-yard pass interference penalty that jump-started the drive in the final minute of the first half, but I think you would agree with me, we're going to see more of Jared Cook as the season goes along.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's going to be a big key for this offense is getting him established, and also how it's really brought out the best in Richard Rodgers, too. I mean, he made one of the nicest catches of the day on that 22-yard, I think it was mostly an out route, that he caught right near the sideline. Just a remarkable catch.
Almost had another diving catch later as well that he just couldn't quite corral or secure before he went out of bounds.
I just really like the balance between those two. I think they were both around the 30 offensive snap counts. So they're going to get both of those guys involved. But yeah, throughout the course of the season, I think you're going to see Jared Cook being a big part of this offense.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we'll throw it to a break from there and be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, shifting gears to the defense, the one injury to come out of the Jacksonville game, Sam Shields leaves the field after laying a hit on running back T.J. Yeldon. Mike McCarthy confirms on Monday that Shields is in the league's concussion protocol. And boy, you cross your fingers that this is not going to be a serious thing. Shields has had concussions in the past. Early in his career, he had one or two where he hardly missed any time, maybe one game, or I think one time maybe didn't even miss a game at all. But then last year, he got another concussion and missed the final three regular season games plus the first playoff game before coming back for the Arizona divisional round. And we don't know how severe this concussion is for Shields, but for the sake of the Packers defense, you hope he'll be back sooner than later.
Yeah, and also just from a personal perspective, I really respect the way that Sam Shields plays the game of football. And I had a chance to sit down with him this offseason for a story that I wrote for one of our game day programs. And he's a quiet guy, but he's so interesting and introspective.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that you really understand in terms of how much this game he means to him, how appreciative he was of the opportunity that the Packers gave him in 2010, and obviously the how he's capitalized on that opportunity over the last six seasons. And one of the big things for him this season in his training and everything was he wanted to play the entire season this year. He's still at this point in career hasn't been able to be suited up for every single game in a regular season because of one reason or another. So you want him to be healthy. You want him to achieve his goals. And certainly I know the Packers, the concussion protocol, the emphasis on that right now in the NFL, they take it extremely serious. And that's first and foremost the biggest concern. But from a football perspective, you just hope that Sam Shields is able to still do what he wants to do because this game does mean a lot to him.
Yeah, for sure. And Mike McCarthy said that Shields' history with concussions will be taken into effect, obviously, as they do the testing and see how he comes along in terms of the recovery from this. So we'll see how that goes. The depth in the Packers secondary, looks like it was certainly tested right away when Shields went out in the fourth quarter in Jacksonville and could be tested even more here early in the season. Quentin Rollins, we talked about him in yesterday's show, had the deflection that led to the interception early on, had a couple of rough moments in the second quarter, then came back with a big pass breakup in the end zone on that final drive in the fourth quarter. This is a player, he can play at this level. He has the potential to be really special, and this is a guy that this defense, this coaching staff, has a lot of confidence in.
They do, and I know there was a lot of questions I got with their insider inbox this week kind of asking me what I thought of Quentin Rollins' game and how you sort of surmise everything that you saw there. What I saw was a very young cornerback that learned from his mistakes early on that game and didn't let it affect him in crunch time. There were some plays he wanted to have back. Obviously, the double move, I think, was that with Allen Hurns, and then obviously the touchdown with Julius Thomas. So there were areas there that I know Joe Witt will be talking to him about this week. But at the same time, when Shields is gone, when Ladarius Gunter cramps up, he comes back in, and as soon as he stepped on the field, Blake Bortles was looking his direction, trying to take advantage of that matchup.
Oh, yeah, he wanted to test him. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and as Morgan Burnett said, he's like, I know Quentin Rollins is a basketball player. I know he can get up there and climb the ladder, but even that was pretty impressive what he did in those circumstances. So if they do need to run with him this week or for whatever it is, I know the Packers have a lot of confidence that he can fill and do the job.
Yeah, and it's interesting, and we've talked before about how quickly Rollins has acclimated himself to the cornerback position after that college basketball career. And for him to show what he showed from the psychological standpoint, the old cliche of you have to have a short memory,
right.
You can't let it bother you, you just have to move on to the next play, he did that to a T, because if he's bothered at all by what happened in the second quarter, that ball to Robinson in the fourth quarter is probably a touchdown and the Packers are 0-1.
And this is a situation where the Packers didn't really have another option. It had to be Quentin Rollins. Otherwise, they were really out of place in terms of who they would have potentially been able to use on the perimeter,
yeah.
With Shields down and Gunter down. And Josh Hawkins, the undrafted rookie cornerback they brought in, was missing that game due to a hamstring injury. So it was basically essential for him not only to fill that void and fill it well, but to be on the field. So understanding that moment and really being able to adjust that quickly is a testament to him, and it's also a testament to that secondary for being able to adapt and really roll with the punches at a critical point in that game.
Yeah, and Ladarius Gunter, you mentioned him. He did go out of the game with cramps there toward the end, but that's another young guy that we could be seeing more of. When he came into the game on Sunday, he got beat on a very similar double move, the stop-and-go type of move that Rollins was beaten on earlier. Again, another guy who just has to shake it off, and he certainly will. I think the Packers are going to need to rely on Gunter here a little bit more, depending on how long Shields is out.
Tremendous size, also has a really good feel for the football and how exactly to play, you know, to make up for maybe some of the areas that aren't his strengths. So, it's one of those things that he's a year smarter. He's put a lot of effort in this offseason into making sure that he was going to be up every game day after being inactive quite a bit last season. So, this is going to be something that if the opportunity's there, you can expect that Ladarius Gunter is going to make the most of it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one area we haven't touched on yet from the Jacksonville game is special teams. We'll get to that after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, let's touch on the special teams from week one briefly here. All eyes on Jake Shum, the Packers' new punter. And boy, with those first three punts he had, you couldn't have asked for much more. You know, high hangers, good distance, Packers covered them well. Then the fourth punt, the clutch one where you needed to flip the field a little bit, only a 34-yard punt, it went out of bounds. Now, the Packers caught a break, a holding penalty, turned it into a 44-yard net, so to speak, with pushing the Jaguars back another 10 yards. But the one thing you wanted to see from Shum was a better punt in the clutch situation.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, Ron Zook talked about that a little bit this week and in terms of what he's going to have to do going forward in a situation like that. But before I get into that, starting off with the positives, the thing that really impressed me the most, you touched on some of the punts that he had early in that game. And certainly, as we discussed last week, he's accustomed and used to punting in Florida conditions during his time with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But some of those coming out of the back of the end zone,
yeah, you know,
those short punts,
yeah,
really showed, I thought, a lot of leg talent for one, but also really good moxie to get the Packers out there and attempt to start getting the field position more back and towards their favor, because really that's the part of the game where if you don't get a good punt off there, you're really looking at a short field.
Yeah, so. He didn't give the Jaguars one of those gimme short fields,
right,
with a bad punt out of the end zone, and those were a couple of big situations that he gave the defense a chance to get the stop.
Definitely. And obviously, as you touched on that last punt at the end, it was kind of similar to the Kansas City game a little bit, where he had seven terrific punts and then one near the end that was, you know, kind of left a little bit to be desired. But at the same time, a young guy, I thought with the operation, with the field goals, working with Brett Goode for the first time, Mason Crosby, made all five of his kicks. So a positive first day, I thought, for Shum getting intertwined with this team and certainly trying to build off of these early performances.
Yeah, and we didn't see any issues with the holding for Crosby, a couple of field goals, three extra points. Everything was awfully smooth there.
And how about Brett Goode? I mean, let's give that guy some credit, too. Yeah. I mean, eight and a half months removed from reconstructive knee surgery. I ISO'd on him a little bit during some of those punting plays. He's getting down the field just as fast as ever. I mean, just a really hard-nosed, experienced vet. And his ability to jump back in there, even though Crosby loses Tim Mastay in terms of his holder and a guy he's worked with for a number of years, getting back Goode, someone he has such a long relationship with, I think is probably something that's going to help that operation going forward.
Yeah, as you say, give Goode some credit for stepping in like he did, because we saw two games in week one, the high snap on the final field goal attempt by Carolina and then the low outside snap on the final field goal attempt by Arizona on Sunday night that probably were factors in those kicks being missed and their teams losing those ball games. So definitely hats off to Goode there. In the return game, we saw Micah Hyde on punt returns have trouble with the sun. He just couldn't find the ball, had to let it go. And it's hard to blame Hyde, because then when the direction switched for the second quarter, the Jaguars punt returner did exactly the same thing. The ball's up there, he's looking for it, and he just got out of the way, because that's how tough the sun was. It was a difficult day in the return game.
Two things on that. One, Micah Hyde is one of my favorite players to talk to in terms of how much you learn chatting with him and in terms of what the mindset is of an NFL football player. Because you and I were doing the pregame, our Periscope before the game.
Yeah.
I was sweating, having to put, you know, trying to just see the screen in front of us from that direct high sun that they had in Jacksonville. But he said, and it ended up being true, and I watched the TV copy, he was talking with the referee like, I can't see the football, the second time he went out there, and he couldn't. And it's just something where he said, I'm not going to muff the punt. Even if I put our offense back, I'm not going to give them a turnover there, because that's a killer.
Right.
He's an experienced guy, and I think you just got to trust Micah Hyde. If he can't find the football, you still want to make sure it doesn't turn into a catastrophe.
Yeah, and Ron Zook said even the back judge on the field even told him during a commercial break, it's really bad out here in terms of the visibility, trying to see the ball when it was up in the air. So, well, before we go to break, let's take care of a little bit of sponsor business here, Wes. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, final segment. You attended an event last night, Monday night, with regards to a joint donation made by Mike McCarthy and the Packers organization to the Green Bay Police Foundation, something that is close to Mike McCarthy's heart, given his family's history. We saw on Sunday in Jacksonville some of the Packers players come off the sideline to help hold the football field size American flag for the national anthem there on 9/11, and the follow-up, the event in Green Bay on Monday night. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it was a really neat event in Green Bay, with kind of just bringing everything together. This is an initiative that kind of was started by the new police chief of police, Andrew Smith, here in Green Bay. And the biggest goal that they're trying to do is raise money and funds for really youth-oriented community programs to really help that relationship and build that friendship and relationship with youth in the area. And this is an initiative that Chief Smith started back when he was in Los Angeles before he came to Green Bay, and really is something that Mike McCarthy, as you mentioned, having strong ties to public safety with his father Joe serving 38 years in the Pittsburgh Police Force and as a firefighter. So a really touching night, a lot of interesting stories. And for the Packers, a joint donation with Mike McCarthy for $200,000 to go towards that, and also providing some safety equipment for the police officers. A really neat festivity to be a part of.
Yeah, that and that relationship between the youth and the police. Not to say that there aren't problems in Green Bay. It's not, but not to the level that maybe we've seen in other communities around the country. This strikes me as very much a proactive gesture and a proactive move by the police department and by the Packers and the head coach with this donation to really kick off some important youth programs.
Yeah, exactly, Mike. And Chief Smith, he's been in working as a police officer for more than 28 years, and he said the time that we're in right now, he's never seen the relationship strained as much between servicemen and then also or policemen and then also the public in which they're protecting. So as Mark Murphy talked about too, this is a difficult time right now in the country, and to have programs to increase awareness and knowledge and really be able to capitalize on getting ahead of the curve, so to speak. They hope that this is something that can really stymie or really promote a lot of growth and also allow the Packers to get involved with a really, really good cause. And that's something they're certainly always looking to do.
Yeah, and just getting back to Jacksonville briefly on Sunday, that the 9/11 tribute, Jacksonville's a Navy town.
Yeah.
They took that very seriously, the 9/11 tribute on the scoreboard and with a pretty stirring rendition of the national anthem. We saw a lot of football field-sized flags across the NFL landscape on Sunday, some pretty neat moments.
It was very touching.
All right. Well, we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. At Packers for the team account. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time.